If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What Astros news is there to talk about in January, you may ask? Well, a lot, apparently. Astros are interviewing GM candidates, arbitration hits a couple of snags, and we get to get some fake excitement on for some international players who we've probably never heard of. It is episode 6 of Stone Cold Stros. What is up, everybody? Welcome into Stone Cold Stros. I am SportsMap Houston sports director Brandon Strange. I am joined, as I am every week, by SportsMap.com editor Josh Jordan, who you can follow him on Twitter at JoshJordan975, and SportsMap senior contributor Charlie Palullo. Follow him at Palullo. Guys, welcome in.
Welcome to you. 40 days to the spring training opener. Who's counting? Well, obviously I am.
Indeed. Absolutely. Well, let's get right into it because we have, like I said, we have a surprising amount of news to talk about. A lot happened over the weekend. We'll get into the arbitration talk first. As reported over the weekend, the Astros avoid arbitration with Framber Valdez, Ryan Stanek, Jose Urquidy, Phil Maton, Mauricio Dubon, and Blake Taylor. But at this point, it appears they are headed to arbitration with Christian Javier and Kyle Tucker. They are only off by $500,000 on Javier. I say that $500,000, like, because it's someone else's money, and $2.5 million for Tuck. And we've all waited to see news of Tucker being signed to a long-term deal, but there's been no movement on that. They are not close on the first arbitration number. Guys, does this make you less optimistic that Tucker and the Astros will be able to reach an eventual long-term extension?
I would say less optimistic, but still not concerned, right? We always need to put in, hey, he's 3 years away from potential free agency, so there's a very long runway. You'd like that smoothest runway as possible and no hard feelings to develop or anything like that. I wouldn't sweat those details as an Astros fan at this point. A 50% difference in evaluation. The Astros offering the $5 million. Team Tucker seeking $7.5 million. And just quickly, for those not familiar with the salary arbitration process, look, if you're watching or listening to this, you probably are. But for those who might not be, if you go to the hearing, it's either or, right? It's a three-person panel. The Astros go in and, well, trash Kyle Tucker. Here's why he shouldn't get the money he wants, $5 million. And then Tucker presents his case for here's why I should get the $7.5 million. And then the arbitration panel decides one or the other. They can't say, hey, split the difference, 6.25, nice simple number in between. It's either or if you go through the hearing. And the hearing, by its nature, is an animosity-driven process. You're talking down your own player to try to hold down his salary. But I don't think that should have some lingering grudge. He'd still be another 2 years away from free agency after this one. 5 versus 7.5. Okay, that's a wide gulf. It's also ample room for negotiation. You know, the midpoint is 6.25. The Astros' track record in winning these cases actually hasn't been that great in recent years, but it's a relatively small number of cases that have gone through the hearing. When they have settled, and the Astros' general position has been, well, if we don't settle before we exchange numbers, we'll go through the hearing. Doesn't have to be that way. You meet the guy at a little more than and halfway. So if they offer Tucker 6.75, would he take that? If not, I would say that's an indication of not rancor, but hey, you signed Jordan 6 years, $19.5 million per year. Michael Brantley, who's vastly less important to this team, of course, a different phase of his career, but coming off season-ending injury, he's getting $12 million, and you're only offering me $5 million. No, I'll go to the wall, make my case for $7.5 million. And remember, once you get 1 year in arbitration, that becomes the foundation if you're back in the same scenario a year from now.
Yeah, my only observation is that, you know, we heard reports that Tucker and the Astros were trying to negotiate a deal before the season started. You know, talks fell off, haven't really re-engaged from what I've heard. So I'm not all that surprised that Maybe Tucker values himself a little more than the Astros are willing to put out there. Just kind of something that goes along with that narrative that we thought to be the case. And I believe if they're going to get Tucker done, they are going to have to pay him more than Yordan. I don't think there's any way around it. So I think this is just kind of a sign of things to come. Like Charlie said, nothing to panic about, but this does make sense.
In a lawsuit, right, oftentimes the suer will throw a number way out there to give room to haggle down, negotiate down from that point. But you know, the jury can't say, okay, here's A, here's B, and where's we'll split the difference. It is that either or scenario if you go through the hearing. And let me just throw this in. Kyle Tucker, barely over the minimum last season, terrific season, $764,000, give or take. Look, that's a top one percenter as an American in terms of income. But in baseball, that's barely over the minimum. So the Astros paid Tucker about $765,000. His World Series share was over $500,000. Kyle Tucker also, with the new bonus plan that each team kicks in about $1.7 million, and the top 100 pre-arbitration eligible players are awarded performance bonuses. Yordan Alvarez made an extra $2 million plus that way. Kyle Tucker made an extra $1 million plus. So his Astros salary was under $770,000. But he made an additional more than $1.5 million through his performance bonus, which is the other teams all chipping in to pay Kyle Tucker that bonus, 1/30th per team, and then the World Series share. I also would include that Kyle Tucker is the fifth pick in the draft when he came out, got a $4 million signing bonus. So as usual, no pity party necessary if he loses. You know, it's not as if the Astros are keeping him down, trying to pay him an insulting wage at $5 million. It's the process. But I contrast that to Christian Javier, only $500,000, as you put it, only $500,000, Brandon. We're talking baseball money. Yep. $3 million, $3.5 million. Found the Astros, you know, I offer him $3.35 million and let's call it a day. Christian Javier, like Framber Valdez, their original signing bonuses with the Astros, $10 grand, $10,000 relative to Kyle Tucker's $4 million. So Christian Javier, who also made a little over the minimum last year, well, his career earnings to that point were minimal. So that World Series bonus, huge. And the $500,000 would make more difference, I think, to Christian Javier for this year than the better part of $2.5 million to Kyle Tucker. But this is just the way collective bargaining works. And salary arbitration overall has been tremendous for the players through the years. It just leads to a little angst in individual cases from time to time.
Yeah, and I'd say a couple of things. One is just because it looks like they're headed that way now, doesn't necessarily mean that they will go to the hearing, because we've seen some last minute deals that have been made. I think Springer comes to mind in his last year. I think they appeared to be headed towards arbitration. I think ended up avoiding that, but that is literally off the top of my head. I could be wrong on that.
Well, yeah, and they did a 2-year deal with George Springer. They gave him 2 years, $24 million, giving him an extra $12 million of security, buying out the last year of salary arbitration. So there would be one form of middle ground with Kyle Tucker, who's still 3 years away from free agency. Okay, we're offering you $5 million this year. Well, next year we bump that to $12 million.
Yeah.
And then you're offering him 2 years, $17 million, where he'd still be another year from free agency. I'm sure Team Tucker's saying, no, 2 years, we want at least $20 million. And you can either haggle a deal or not.
Yeah.
And you can settle until the very last moment, until the arbitration panel hands it down, and just like in a civil suit, until the jury announces the verdict, the amount, you can plead it out as you will, though that generally has not been the Astros' case once you get into the hearing.
And before we get into the Jim Crane's cheap narrative, this is not a Jim Crane thing. Look at the other notable players that are out there that are, you know, going to go to appear to be headed towards arbitration: Teoscar Hernandez, Bo Bichette, Gleyber Torres, Gio Urshela, Max Fried, Yandy Diaz, and noted Yordan Alvarez victim, Jose Alvarado. I would just remind Astros fans that in 2019, when Carlos Correa and the team were off by $750,000, Correa won his hearing, and the first thing he tweeted afterwards was complimenting the Astros on their professionalism through the process. They agreed in the next two arbitration cycles, on the amount. That did not prevent him from going and seeking a bigger bag once he was a free, unrestricted free agent. So agreeing, not agreeing on the number doesn't necessarily dictate whether the player is going to stay or not. I don't know if you can use that as a barometer. I will say, for perspective, just in a vacuum, when you talked about how $500,000 would make more of a difference to Christian Javier than Kyle Tucker, $500,000 would make more difference to me than both of those guys. So when you hear these numbers getting thrown around, it's just so funny. All of us, I think, would be happy living on the differences between what these guys are asking for and what the teams are willing to pay them. I will take it either way.
And it's just the system, and year by year, right? Kyle Tucker won't be compared if they go into the hearing. Kyle Tucker, he's wasting his time if he says, well, Yordan Alvarez just signed for $19.5 million per year. And yeah, he's a better hitter than me, but I'm a gold glove outfielder, and I'm the best base stealer on the Astros, and I'm the better all-around player. Doesn't matter. Kyle Tucker will be compared to first-year eligible outfielders in salary arbitration, both past and present. In the end, he's going to come out all right. Just one other Astro arbitration item, you know, year by year, service time matters. Right? The Astros offered Christian Javier $3 million. They settled with Phil Maton for just over $2.5 million, right? Phil Maton is essentially an appendix in the Astros bullpen at this point. Christian Javier, right, the preseason dart at the board of some to win a Cy Young Award, or certainly counted on as a mainstay stud in the Astros rotation. Well, it's Javier's first time here. It's Maton's last time here. He's eligible for free agency. So which rung you are on the ladder in terms of service time just impacts all this stuff.
And the CarShield commercials for Kyle Tucker. Don't forget those. Maybe he can get Christian Javier doing those with him, and they both make out great. How about that?
I think he's overpaid in those, whatever the rate is, to be honest.
This brings us to our next big headline from over the weekend. The Astros had some international signings. Actually, a lot of teams had international signings over the weekend. Astros signed 9 international players, including two of the top 50 ranked international players. Those were number 17 shortstop Camilo Diaz and number 21 outfielder Esmiel Valencia. And we know how much the international pipeline has meant to this organization. Everyone but Lance McCullers is an international signing in their starting rotation. And there's another international player by the name of Yordan Alvarez on the team who's also pretty good at baseball. How much does the Astros' recent success with a bevy of international players as their core, how much does that play into their ability, do you guys think, to go out there and recruit and replen that depleted farm system?
Well, their international money allotment is lower than just about everyone else because the Astros have been better than basically everyone else. And ultimately, winning the World Series, they were better than everyone else. So it's a stair-step process. The worse you are, the more money that you are allocated. But the Astros brand matters. Among the 9 players they signed, 8 Dominicans, just 1 Venezuelan, as Venezuela's political unrest has thrown a wrench into the development works and scouting efforts of all the teams over there. But the Dominican Republic, of course, has just been a treasure trove of products of prospects for decades now. Now, the owners, of course, wanted to go with the international draft. The players didn't want it. They couldn't agree to terms. So we stay with the current system for at least the foreseeable future. Cubans who are defectors, that's a different deal. If you're not heavily invested in the Latin market, the international market, well, you're stupid. And for years, the Orioles basically stayed out of it. And for years, the Orioles were a joke. Now, under Mike Elias, they're really aggressively trying to get their ties that bind and make them appealing to prospects. Money, of course, always talks. But I mentioned Cuba, right? The Astros brand, Yuli Gurriel is a legend of the sport. His dad is a legend of the sport in Cuba. Certainly, Yordan Alvarez is a success here. But all the teams are just swarming on these guys, and you have these shady agents, right? You can sign guys when they're 16 years old, but none of the Astros signees are among the super elite prospects considered in this year's class, but we're talking 16 and 17 year olds. So talk about projections. So I think you cast a wide net. You just go with the toolsiest guys that you can find and hope that your player development system, along with just a little bit of luck, and a little bit that your bird dogs really spotted one, You know, the Astros get two good major leaguers out of these nine kids. Well, that's great. But you cover the starting rotation outside McCullers. Major League Baseball is over 20% Latin. So if you're not mining gold, even though it takes years in most cases to develop it, or have the coal turn of diamonds, maybe a better analogy on it, you're just way, way, way behind the times.
Yeah, I think the amount is interesting of the signings, especially Diaz getting $2.25 million. That's a lot more than the 10 Gs we were talking about a little earlier. So they must see something in this guy that they're really excited about. And yeah, I think this does help the Astros. If you're an international player and you see them win the World Series with all these Latin stars, I mean, Yuli is just a legend in Cuba. This is only good for the Astros. That why wouldn't you want to come here? You win, you get paid well. It's actually pretty close being in Texas, not that far away from home. So makes a lot of sense to me.
Now, I think Charlie's point about it being the brand, that was something that was really repeated during the commentary, although English commentary, take that for granted. But during the commentary, during the games, was just how much of the international players made up such a core part of what the Astros, and just last year in general, there was a lot of breaking down what makes the Astros so good. Why are they always there? And one of those things that people continue to point to is their ability to identify talent in the international recruitment and bring this in. I mean, and obviously none bigger than being able to identify a 16 or a 17 year old Venezuelan by the name of Jose Altuve. And since then, it's just been a bevy of guys who have been called up, tapped, and have made differences on this team. And considering the fact that the Astros have had to pay such steep prices to make blockbuster trades and empty out their farm system, it is incredibly important to be able to go over and identify talent. We always talk about what a big difference maker it was to have a guy like Jeff Luhnow be able to speak to some of these international signees in their native tongue, be able to talk to them in Spanish to convince them over, not go through a translator. You're getting the information right from the horse's mouth. And so that's why it's so big that whoever they are eyeing for their next GM, you would hope that they have a ties to the international community. We see that they are interviewing or actually have interviewed some of these people already. Michael Schwab here was tweeting about some of the GM candidates that Ken Rosenthal has named in his story on The Athletic, Michael Hill, former Marlins president, Dana Brown, who I think is the more interesting of the three, the Braves VP of scouting, and then Bobby Evans, who is the former Giants GM. But looking at these guys, again, I think the Dana Brown, that's a very interesting prospect for a GM or candidate for a GM. There's a difference between scouting talent and being able to run an entire organization. But out of these three, who excites you out of this candidate pool?
Oh, it's clearly Brown. I mean, excitement's not the right word, but if we were just, you had to pick one of these three, there'd be no decision to be made for me. It would be Dana Brown. The Braves are a ship-shaped organization. Their farm system has churned out a phenomenal amount of talent over the last 5-6 years, and it's why they've won the National League East every year for the last 5-6 years. No sign of going away. All those young players that they've locked up to long contracts that look like real good deals, or at least plays going forward for the Braves. Dana Brown helped select a number of those guys, most recently of most consequence, Michael Harris, the National League Rookie of the Year. Young guy, 39 years old, I believe. So if an up-and-comer, and he's a nuts-and-bolts baseball guy, whereas Michael Hill ran operations. I don't think he was thought of as, a personnel ace. And the Marlins, it's such a bad market, their budget constraints, questionable ownership through the years. They have developed a lot of pitching over there, though. And the third guy, you never know who you might be doing a favor for. Ken Rosenthal's an excellent reporter. He's not above being used by agents or those leaking information to, hey, get my guy a hearing or get his name in the mix a little bit. Scratch my back, I'll scratch yours the next time I have some info for you. Bobby Evans, I don't know if there's some link, 6 degrees of separation to Jim Crane somewhere. The Giants had, I'd say, one of the odder dynasties we've seen, the front of the last decade. Won the World Series in 2010, 2012, 2014. He won it all three times in 5 years. That qualifies as a dynasty, though they missed the playoffs entirely in 2011 and 2013. But 2015, Bobby Evans became the general manager. I'm not dumping this all in his lap. Nevertheless, just in terms of the chronology, Bobby Evans took charge. The Giants stopped making the playoffs at all, much less winning World Series. 4 years later, he was fired after 2018. So I don't see why he – and 3 years later, the Giants built back up, won 107 games. So I'm not sure what the angle is on Evans, unless he's just thought of as a great people person, administrator, or there's some other hook of note for Jim Crane. But if I want a young guy from a ship-shape organization, sustainably so, Dana Brown leaps off the page among those three.
Yeah, Brown's the one that interests me the most. As far as Bobby Evans, I think the tie might be that I believe it was reported that he interviewed for the job, the GM job, when Click was hired, and he didn't get it. So he's somebody that they're familiar with, that Crane's familiar with. So that makes some sense. I'm with Charlie. Dana Brown's the one that excites me. Not only Michael Harris, but Spencer Strider's a guy he pounded on the desk for. So this guy's got a good eye for talent. Astros, typically they're not picking super high, right? Because they're a great team. So getting somebody that can find some of these diamonds in the rough, some of these, you know, second, third, fourth rounders, surely would benefit the Astros. That makes a lot of sense. We, you know, we talked about the international talent pool. The other thing, according to Baseball America, the Astros have 7 4-year college products in their top 10 prospects, most of any organization in baseball. So it looks like the Astros have a lot of guys that could be ready for the big leagues sooner rather than later. You bring in, you know, somebody like this, Dana Brown, that can grab you some draft picks that maybe not everybody's on. I'd be excited about this hire.
And at bare minimum, we know the Astros have no interest in Josh McCown.
I wonder if the Astros try to keep the front office afloat this season and don't make a big hire, because, you know, we look at who they're interviewing, and obviously these are qualified candidates, but perhaps they just don't pull the trigger on any of them because the rumors are true. Remember, Bob Nightingale's been talking about this for months now, that it's not a well-kept secret that the Astros are interested in Brewers president David Stearns, and that maybe they'll just keep this piecemeal together for the front office until next year and then make a run at Stearns. You have to feel pretty confident, though, right, that you have a chance of being able to land Stearns for you to put all your eggs in that basket, though, right? And then the other thing to kind of keep in mind, too, is as one of our chatters brought up, let me bring this up. New GM has to agree to be co-GM with Crane. There's some truth in that we've seen with James Click, he kind of had to navigate a power struggle between Dusty Baker and with Jeff Bagwell. So there's a little bit of a weird power dynamic that's at work there too, right?
Whether Jeff Bagwell in all this, right? Whose ear does he have, or who gets his ear? Right? One of Jim Crane's kids. I don't mean for the GM job, but, you know, part of shoving out Reed Ryan a couple of years ago was to get the family a little more integrated with the business, as Tillman Fertitta does with the Rockets, as the Atlanta Hawks owner has his 27-year-old GM apparently helping make moves. And, you know, rank has its privileges, that golden rule. You have the most gold, you get to make rules. But if you're Crane, it's Nicolanti stuff in the big picture. But if you're having a little fun, kind of being your own GM to an extent, you have a couple of other people that you trust. The heavy lifting's done till draft time and the trade deadline. To jump back to those GM candidates, if I'm looking to hire someone to coordinate my draft board and scouting, again, Brown over Hill and Evans there. But for the near term, the Astros are in ship shape. I don't say this in self-deprecating fashion, mostly. He could hire any of us as general manager this year, and the Astros are going to be great.
Right.
Unless they're waylaid by injuries or something else bizarre happens. So Jim Crane can take his sweet time, or you know what? He could say spring training opens in a month. Here's our new GM.
No, that's true. But to what you brought up, Brandon, there's probably something to that, that, you know, Crane has a reputation of being kind of hard to work for. We saw what happened with Click, you know, getting shown the door right after winning a World Series. Like Charlie mentioned, Jeff Bagwell, Dusty Baker in the owner's ear. Sounds like the owner sided with them over the GM. So something that you would consider if you're looking for a job as GM. And of course, all the Stearns reports. Is this something where after a year, they're going to want to move on to him? So there are a few red flags if you're interviewing for this position.
Yeah. And unless the train is in the tunnel on Stearns, tap the brakes a little bit on that. What if the Mets don't win it all this year? Billy Epler did a lame job as the GM of the Angels and somehow failed up an opportunity to get to work for Daddy Warbucks with the Mets. But let's say they're out in the first round again and Steve Cohen wants a new general manager. Well, David Stearns grew up in Manhattan, a lifelong Mets fan. And if it's a bidding war for general manager, pretty sure Jim Crane wouldn't win that one over Steve Cohen. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not thinking fait accompli yet on David Stearns, but it's an easy breadcrumb trail to throw down leading to David Stearns if a year from now turns out the Astros have hired a temp. And, of course, when you have all the success that the Astros have had, you can make move. Oh, that's an analogy that I use. When you are rich and crazy, you're eccentric. When you're poor and crazy, you're crazy. You know, if you go with a one and done general manager as the Astros the year after winning the World Series, that would be eccentric. Whereas you look at the clown show operation the Texans are running, one and done head coaches 2 years in a row, you're crazy or crazy, stupid, no love, right? That's the movie.
Yeah. Well, our commenter here says Crane would have to sign off any major moves anyway. And that's kind of the point of it. And Charlie, when you talk about the Astros winning a bidding war, I don't know anything that sounds less like Jim Crane than a bidding war. Jim Crane's never gotten in a bidding war. He has built a behemoth so that he doesn't have to overpay, so that he doesn't have to panic buy and stock the shelves. The Mets are building what they're building because they're chasing. You know, they're spending that money because of what the Texas Rangers have not scouted well and have not built a solid. So they're chasing with a lot of money. That's what teams who don't have good foundations do, is they spend a lot of money and they get into bidding wars. That's just not Jim Crane style. And you can't argue with the result. I mean, we have somebody here, Darwin says Crane wants a puppet. Well, I mean, the guy clearly knows what he's doing. How can you argue with the results? I mean, maybe he's not the most pleasant guy to work with. That's not, I don't know. That's a different critique than saying the guy can't run a successful team. And clearly the results, the sea change in the direction of the franchise when he took over, and the quick ramp up to success and the results since then they dictate that this man knows how to run this organization and deserves the benefit of the doubt. Again, can he sustain it? You know, how far outside of Jeff Luhnow can we get before the wheels start falling off? We'll see. But so far, so good. And that's going to depend on a lot of things, which is health in the team, whether they continue to scout, and health of other teams is what I want to get into next. And Jack, let's hold title card 4A for dramatic effect here, because I want to tease this. We have some disappointing rival news, Astros rivals news that came out over the weekend. A couple stories. First one, I didn't tell you guys about because I wanted to spring it on you in real time to get your more organic reaction here. Because it's not really a story, but in some disappointing, I said it was disappointing rival news. This weekend, an independent sports platform reported that the Seattle Mariners had signed 17-year-old first base DH prospect from Puerto Garbanzo by the name of, wait for it, Marlboro Jesus. Now, I say it's disappointing, and it's disappointing because it turned out to be a joke. It didn't stop the news from going viral on Twitter. And for the record, there's also no place called Puerto Garbanzo. It's called Punto Garbanzo. But make sure when you say that, you properly enunciate the N. Very important. But in real rival news, and also disappointing, tough news for Frankie Montas. He will miss the first month of the season with shoulder inflammation. This is the same shoulder inflammation that was bugging him last season and caused him to miss time. And obviously we wish him the best. But that said, we didn't have to wait long for that pitching staff that had questionable health guys that we've talked about on this show to hit their first bump. And we just had this discussion about how the Yankees media was overreacting to this rotation, and already they have an issue. Now, I can't wait for Brian Cashman to reach peak desperation and have to pull the trigger on a guy like Trevor Bauer just to see how the MLB media machine tries to rationalize the decision. I'm buying a ticket and a giant tub of popcorn just to watch the national or the New York talking heads, make asshats of themselves trying to rationalize this behavior before the eventual meltdown. So guys, is this just a sign of things to come for a rotation that already had a bunch of question marks in it?
Well, look, Carlos Rodon is a better pitcher than Frankie Montas. He's the one who signed for 6 years at mega money. So as long as his arm holds up, it nets out as a positive for the Yankees with a Cole Rodon 1-2 that pushed Montes down. He has arm history issue before what arose this past season. So they were probably hoping he'd be a stud 4 or 5 man in the rotation. But Severino brings his own questions. Domingo Herman has his own questions. So we did the compare and contrast with the Astros a couple of years ago. Yeah, the Yankees' rotational upside is about as good as the Astros, but there are a lot more capital I, capital Fs attached collectively. What they have there is Nestor Cortez going to remain the phenomenon that he became in 2022, or was that his career year? And he'll settle back down to being the guy who toiled in mostly obscurity until he was about 28 years of age. So I wouldn't kick dirt on the Yankees rotation yet, but they are doing some shoveling.
Yeah. I mean, if you just look at all these guys, Rodon's had some injury issues. Servino, like you talked about, Herman, even Cortez, when it mattered most in the ALCS, he got hurt and couldn't finish that game. That may not be his resume, but when it counted, he was hurt. He couldn't come through for him. Really, it's Gerrit Cole. He's their horse. We know what he can do. He also gives up a lot of home runs. That's also another thing Gerrit Cole does. So, yeah, Brandon, when this came out, I mean, everybody was weighing in on how the Yankees have the best rotation now. And I'm also hearing that, Montas was behind as well. It could be more like 2 months than just 1 month by the time he gets back.
I do find it funny that for as much crap as Gerrit Cole takes from that fan base, he's the horse that answers the bell. It's they're so quick to want to see the best out of Cortez and Severino and these guys. And yet they have Gerrit Cole right there. And yeah, I mean, the guy gives up a lot of home runs. He gave up one to, Chaz McCormick, but I mean, you gave up like 2 runs and that's it. And that's enough to win. I find it funny that they are so quick with the hook. Just as a fan base, not even as an organization, but the fan base is just so quick to dump all over Gerrit Cole when really it's Aaron Judge who's failed in the big moments, and they were just ready to pay him all the dollars. Granted, it's not their money, but they were just pay the man whatever he wants. That's an interesting contrast, I find.
Bright lights, big city, right? Gerrit Cole, 9 years at $36 million per, and he didn't set an American League record for anything of consequence. Judge has not really had his October glory yet either, at least in Cole's case. As a Yankee, he hasn't had any either. But when you only go perform once every 5 days in New York, if he threw a no-hitter in the playoffs, they'd probably say, why didn't you throw a perfect game? But when you're the number one guy, and he's a top 10 starting pitcher, but until the Scherzer and Verlander contracts, shorter contracts, but higher average annual value, when you're the richest guy in the sport, number one money, the number one stage, when the Yankees were one of your favorite teams, your two favorite teams growing up, you're supposed to stand and deliver in those biggest moments. He hasn't been a flop by any means, but his ERA was about 3.40 last season. Durability has been a signature of Gerrit Cole's. Will that maintain over the 6 years still remaining on that contract? You know, he's 31, 32 years old now, because even if he pitches to an ERA of 3.20 when they're hoping for more like 2.20, 200 innings of 3.20, that's a bulwark. That's a guy that you can count on, be keeping you in games regularly and minimizing toll on your bullpen and so forth. Sometimes you don't want to appreciate as much what's right in front of your face as you should.
Yeah, I mean, and if we believe the juice balls report that came out, maybe that takes Gerrit Cole off the hook a little bit. I believe he gave up the most home runs in the American League last year. So for what you're paying him to give up that many home runs, we can make what we want of if he was throwing more juice baseballs than other guys, if that report's true. I don't know. Gerrit Cole's a great pitcher, but in the big moments, I'll take Fromber.
Indeed. Well, I mean, obviously the proof was in the pudding and last season. I want to get to our next story here, which was, we didn't even get to talk about the Carlos Correa, as it always happens on our show, is we talk about something and then literally within 24 hours of us finishing the show, some news breaks that kind of updates whatever it is we were talking about. We haven't even talked about the Carlos Correa, you know, where, how that ended up. He's now with the Twins after tentative deals with the Giants and then Mets, ends up back with the Twins again. Alex Rodriguez congratulated Carlos Correa on his new deal with the Tigers. He says, tip of the cap to the Twins and the generational talents. Carlos Correa, a top five talent in the game. So, guys, this is pretty easy. Carlos, I'm not trying to be petty. Congrats to Carlos for getting his bag, for sure. And also, tip of the hat to A-Rod for giving him a shout-out. What do you guys think of Carlos Correa being called a top five talent?
Well, look, when it comes to baseball insight, A-Rod's good on some things, some others not so good. He does have a history of lying, so maybe he was just making it up. anyone recall who Alex Rodriguez's agent was? Oh, Team Scott Boras and all that. Correa, of course, is phenomenally talented, top five in the game. What's going to be our measuring stick? He's certainly not a five-tool player. He hasn't had a stolen base in 3 years. Or one stolen base in 3 years. I'd also add A-Rod trying to ingratiate himself with the locals. Right? He's in the process of becoming one of the majority owners of the group buying the Minnesota Timberwolves. So this is not how Correa played it out, and he was great in a press conference because he just handles himself in public very well. But to go from the Mets at over $300 million to the Minnesota Twins, which is in baseball Siberia. They've had multiple stretches of making regular playoff appearances, but they've also not made a playoff appearance in the last couple of years, and they have the longest postseason losing streak in the history of postseason losing streaks, 18 and counting. So this was not Correa's ideal fallback. Wish him well, right? 6 years, $200 million. He'll be able to pay both kids' college funds without difficulty. I'm going to say egg on his face, but if you're Carlos Correa in an honest, quiet moment, don't you have to say, geez, would 5-160 have been that bad to stay with the Astros? And no one would already have put me in the rearview mirror in their Astro dreams with Jeremy Peña having won an ALCS MVP and a World Series MVP. I'm not gone and forgotten already, but the blow was surely softened as much as possible in just 1 year's time.
Yeah, and we talked about it in our sports map video the other day that the guaranteed money that the New York Mets were offering was actually a little bit less than the contract he got offered with the Astros. So that whole narrative we've talked about Jim Crane not wanting to spend money, it's not true. Turns out he saw the market just about as good as anybody did. And, you know, we even heard a report, somebody with knowledge in the negotiations, that, you know, a stint on the IL could have avoided that contract for Carlos if it involved that ankle. That's what was reported that we heard. So I can't blame him for looking elsewhere to get that deal done. But top five talent in MLB, I mean, I could almost argue there's five Astros I'd rather have than Correa. You know, if I just go to Altuve and Yordan and Breckman and Tucker and, you know, Jose Abreu, I know he's getting older, but and Jeremy Peña, gold glove last year, all the MVPs that we talked about in the playoffs. So, Yeah, I think A-Rod's shooting a little high there. But I guess with the word talent, that leaves it up to debate. What would you argue that means as far as talent? So, and they caught a little bit of it too on social media. There was people came at A-Rod, and Carlos got a little bit of that, some stray bullets in the process.
Charlie, where do you see that? I just want to throw in quickly on this. One component of talent is durability.
Yep.
Right. If you're great in limited doses, well, you're not nearly as valuable as guys who are really good, but in full dosage. Carlos Correa has finished top 15 for American League MVP once, right? Fifth is last year with the Astros. Now, at least he's trended up the last 2 years, pretty durable, but he's played more than 140 games once in his career. If we were having a draft, just a straight draft of all major leaguers for 2023, and 2023 only, Carlos Correa is not going in the top five. Come on.
No, but what about what Josh said? Is he even going in the top five in the Astros organization?
Carlos Correa is a better player than Jeremy Peña. Jeremy Peña had an awesome postseason. Well, Carlos Correa was a heck of a postseason player here this year, and he was a vastly better offensive player than Peña was in 2022, even if the metrics on Correa that the defense, we'll see if it was a one-year or his career erosion on, as he's now closer to, or will be closer to 30 end of next season, and then to 25. But Carlos Correa's best, right? If you're going to call him a generational player and look at everything he's accomplished, his best full season of baseball is not close to Altuve's best full seasons of baseball, to Alex Bregman's best full seasons of baseball. Jordan, a bit different category, but he's so extremely great offensively. That he finished second for MVP and figures to finish in the top five repeatedly. Correa has done that once and probably isn't a great bet for that going forward. So I'll cut A-Rod some slack, I guess, on a hyperbole, a fellow Boris guy shortstop who was willing to move to third to go to New York if that's what it took. But everyone's entitled to opinions, right? We all get one just like noses.
I certainly agree. Availability, one of the more important abilities. Do you think this was a sobering offseason for him? Because, you know, we saw him bet on himself twice. Remember Boris going to the story of Boris going to the Astros and saying, well, the opening bid's 400. This is clearly not what he was holding out for when he was playing hardball with the Astros, right?
When a consolation prize is $200 million on top of the $35 that he made in the initial first year with the Twins, that's not bad, but for career, for legacy, right? With the Astros, he was on course to have his number retired and be a statue outside of Minute Maid Park. That's gone. And how many times over the next 6 years, it's easier to get in with the further expanded wild card field, but the Minnesota Twins are a small marketing franchise, right? That they're just going to stay great because that's who they are. They've had stretches where they've made the playoffs four times in 5 years, but then they have these droughts and they're in a weak division. Maybe the Twins win it in 2023, breakthrough in the playoffs, and Carlos Correa becomes the stuff of legend in Minneapolis. If so, well, how about that? But the Cleveland Indians right now are a better organization than the Minnesota Twins. Chicago White Sox are in flux. Tigers stink. Royals stink. So there is some opportunity for the Twins, but they're a grossly inferior bet over the next 6 years to the Astros, to the Mets. The Giants, that was about getting the max money to go to a division there with the Dodgers and the Padres. But there is no way in hell when Carlos Correa hit the market, he was thinking, yeah, I'm going to spend the next 7 years of my career as a Minnesota Twin and be damn happy about it.
Yeah, the Giants, at least you can say they've been good somewhat recently, and the contract was so long, you know, over 12 years. Who knows what they could load around Carlos to make that a super competitive team just because there are so many years involved.
But, and it's a super rich market, a very rich franchise. When they're good, they mint money with that ballpark.
Yes, so that made a little sense to me with Carl. At least you'd be playing against some top-notch teams, and eventually you would think they would surround you with the ability to win in that division. You know, Minnesota, they may make the playoffs from year to year. That's nice, but I don't consider them to be a World Series contender. And to Carlos, yeah, it probably had to be a bit of an ego shot. Just, it was so public, all these negotiations going wrong, but he didn't do anything wrong. You know, a medical didn't check out. That's not Carlos's fault. It's just an unfortunate circumstance. And at the end of the day, he made a ton of money and he's going back to Minnesota.
We have reached towards the end of the podcast here. This is when we ask our bottom line question. So if you're watching this live with us on YouTube, you can participate and give us your answer here. Before we read the question, I just want to say, please, if you're watching this, please hit like on the video. Subscribe to the channel. If you prefer the audio podcast, we are on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most of the other big ones. Our bottom line question this week, Charlie and Josh, MLB.com put out their next 10 World Series predictions. And this is predictions for the 2023 seasons through the 2032 seasons. Over the next 10 World Series, I believe Will Leach is the one who wrote this for MLB.com. Will predicts that not once time in the next 10 years will the Astros make an appearance in the World Series, much less win it. They won't even appear after making 4 out of the last 6. So, guys, my question to you is, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not so crazy and 10 is you need to be in the loony bin, where do you rate this projection by Will Leach?
Well, all I know is, if I'm an Ohioan, how stoked am I for 2032 when the Guardians and Reds will play in the Fall Classic, according to said projection. You know, you threw a couple of small market teams in there just for the sake of doing so. It's a ridiculous exercise to project 10 years out. If over the next 3 seasons is a simple yes or no, do the Astros make another World Series? I would bet yes on that. So if you're going to give me an extra 7 bonus years and say they go 0 for the next 10, of course it could happen. But if Will Leach's projection there was on a piece of paper, I'd just wad it up and look for a trash basket near me. Basket, not can.
Yeah, as long as it's not the sports almanac from Back to the Future too, I'm not too concerned with this list here. I think the Astros are going to be just fine. And man, I'll go to a 10. How do you not put them in the World Series one time out of the next 10 years? That's crazy to me. So yeah, I'm not buying that whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm going to go 10 just because I told everybody who would listen to me last year, which is not a big list, but everyone who would listen last year, I said, I don't really see how the Astros make the World Series again in 2022, because it's just so hard. It's so unprecedented to make back-to-back World Series. And for them to make back-to-back World Series and then to win it obviously showed me I know very little about baseball, which anybody who listens to this podcast can easily ascertain that. But the point of it is these are hard to project. And yes, I would say that maybe the fact that the Astros have been there as many times as they have, maybe that makes it statistically less likely that they return. But I just don't see how you say that, considering looking at what the AL looks like right now. And I think he has the Blue Jays going there in 2023 to the series. We've talked about this on this channel a lot and on this show specifically a lot. I think a lot of the time this kind of content's put out there to get reactions, to get people talking and sharing, even if it's just to say, you guys are idiots, you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, there's plenty of times when we put content out there and we're told idiots and we don't know what we're talking about, which may as well be true, but the point of this, I think, is to kind of stir some controversy and probably to kind of poke it to Astros fans a little bit, who, you know, have been feeling themselves the past few seasons.
And picking chalk all the time, I guess, can get boring. Of course, I believe he picked the Dodgers over the Blue Jays in 2023. A meaningless exercise to project 10 years out, but where it matters, you want to put your money where your mouth is. Will Leach want to bet a year's salary that the Astros don't make another World Series appearance in the next 10 years? Probably not. And if you want to go bet on who's going to win the American League pennant right now, the Astros are the favorite. If you want to make a bet right now on who's going to win a 2023 World Series, the Astros are a co-favorite or a tri-favorite. So Will Leach, like everyone else, can put out whatever he chooses to put out. I believe he originally made his mark on Deadspin. So make of it what you will. Just make sure you don't make much of it at all.
Yeah. I don't think Vegas is going to be hiring him to run their lines.
No, I don't think so. And I think a lot of this is all the backlash to Jim Crane firing Click, you know, calling him the Jerry Jones of baseball. So maybe it's just kind of easy to point some bad PR at the Astros because they hate Houston anyway. So why not?
Well, if he named 17 different teams, that's 17 different major league markets giving a little run to Will Leach today, right?
Yeah, good point. Well,
let's get to some of our chats and see what they say. Nick says 10, no question. Andrew Ortiz says 10 million. So there you go. Not sure why I see the Yankees in there at all. It's a great point. Ryan says simply because there are no Astros in there, it's a 10. Harley says typical big market media leaving the Astros out and also the everlasting unforgiveness. Jeremy says, how hard is it to project the best team in baseball being in the World Series in the next 10 years? He's simple-minded. So there you go. Guys, Charlie, Josh, appreciate you joining me this week. We want to thank all of the people who have been chatting and contributing, who watch us live. We are live every Monday at 3 p.m., barring unforeseen circumstances, but we're live every Monday, 3 p.m., and then you can watch us on demand anytime on YouTube on the Sports Map Houston YouTube channel. Please subscribe that if you haven't already. I want to thank our producer, Jack, for contributing. I'm going to put him on screen. Hi, Jack. He didn't realize I was going to do that. Guys, thank you so much for joining this week's show. Again, we will talk to you next week. Go Stros.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.